You did have the opportunity to pick up a handout in the lobby that shows you where you can go on the website to look at these again and find other information. So I'm going to just take a couple minutes and tell you another story because somebody remembers that I told it somewhere and they want to hear it again. When I got in the biggest trouble as a preacher's kid, my dad was asked to move to Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I met, cold is right, big letters. And I met a lady here who was from Winnipeg, and I met her when I was up there doing a women's retreat. Well, we had just moved there, and we were staying in a motel, and we had driven to the church the night before so we'd know how to get there in the morning, but everything looked different in the morning, and we were late. So we walked in, and my father hated to be late. One of the elders or deacons met us and said, "Oh, you must be the preacher's kid. Come, I'll show you where you're supposed to go." So I went with him. We came into this room. There must have been about 20 chairs around the room. And the young, enthusiastic, but very unenlightened youth leader said, "Oh, you must be the preacher's kid. You're the only one we were expecting today. Well, you do know you're late." Okay, for someone who is pretty close to being introverted, that was a little stressful. There was one empty chair, and he said, "Here, why don't you sit there?" Well, okay, it was either on somebody's lap or on that chair, so I took the empty chair. He says, "We were just getting ready to go around the room and have everybody repeat their favorite verse and where it's found." Okay, rote memorization is really hard for my brain. I can remember the gist of almost anything, but, you know, my dad would have me memorize Bible verses, and I always looked for the shortest ones I could find. My favorite was "Jesus wept." And anything with three or four words was a go. But I'd come out for breakfast, and he'd say, "All right, Arlene, tell me what John 3:16 says." John 3:16, oh my. "Oh, I know. It says that God loves us a lot." And my father would say, "No, Arlene, it doesn't. It says, for God so loved the world." And I said, "Well, that's basically what I said, Dad." And he says, "No, you got to do it word for word." Okay, terribly hard for me. So this guy looks at me and he says, "And since you were late, we'll let you go first." And I'm thinking, oh, a verse and where it's found. I have no idea what came over me. I said, "My favorite verse goes like this. It is better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Hezekiah 13:13. The leader goes, "Yes, I remember that verse." I'm going, "Ha, ha, ha, he does?" Okay, well, evidently at the break between Sabbath school and church, he went and found a Bible and he couldn't find the book of Hezekiah. He did find the preacher. Says, "Pastor Taylor, I've looked everywhere for the book of Hezekiah. It must be one of those little books in the Old Testament, but I can't find it." And he says, "There is no book of Hezekiah. There's a King Hezekiah, but there's no book of Hezekiah." Well, he says, "There has to be. Your daughter quoted from it." Okay, and that was my life as a preacher's kid. All right, let's do this. If I can get this to work. Yes, we go. Whoops, went too far. All right. Approximately, human body, 75% water, 25% solid matter. And it sort of resembles what's going on planet Earth, although maybe the water's going to end up getting a little more, who knows. Dehydration is just an alteration in that equation in favor of solid matter, and that's not good because it impacts the entire body, but it definitely impacts the brain. So here's just a few estimates. You know, there are other estimates, but you can see that the brain itself is about 75 3/4 water, but the cells are much higher than that. They're 85% water, and as far as I've seen, the liver is the only part of the body that has a higher water content. So the brain and the brain cells are high in water, and they need water. But the estimates are in the United States that if you're over 50, you're already dehydrated. And that's partly because as we age, I mean, 50 is the new 30, you know, 80 is the new 60. But these statistics say that if you're over 50, you've probably already started to lose the thirst sensation. And you're not drinking nearly enough water because by the time you are thirsty, if that sensation is even working, you're already dehydrated. And if you are drinking sodas and pop and fruit juice and think you're doing well, you are further dehydrating yourself because it requires water just to digest them. And the good thing about water is it requires no digestion. So I say that the world has a drinking problem. And it's got nothing to do with alcohol. It has to do with absolute dehydration. There is some emerging research that if people were drinking enough, you might not be able to completely prevent dementias, Parkinson's, and Lou Gehrig's disease, but you would likely reduce the symptoms and slow the rate of development. And that's pretty staggering just to think about drinking water. If you're dehydrated, it impacts all of the brain layers and all of their functions, which means you probably are not going to manage stress as well as you could, because that's management starts down in the reptilian layer. You will have trouble with routines, forget a step, miss a step, because that's all loaded in the first brain layer. Your emotional impulses may be erratic or too intense, because that comes out of the middle layer, and your immune system health is completely orchestrated by the middle layer. Conscious thought, executive functions, going to have trouble problem solving, writer's block, trouble being creative, and so on. Memorize this. A 1% level of dehydration, and you don't even feel thirsty yet, results in a 5% reduction in the brain's ability to think. That's staggering. So if you've got a 2% dehydration rate, look what it's doing to your cognition. And how does that show up? Forgetful, trouble focusing, general difficulty getting things finished, decreased productivity, and the amount of work product increases your level of making mistakes just because you're 1% dehydrated. Accident proneness. Now, normally there's more water inside the brain cells than out. As you become dehydrated, dehydration reverses that ratio. And because most of the chemical processes that help you think occur inside the cell, that's one of the reasons for the problems. And that can impact hormone production, enzyme production, and cell replication. So here we have the cells in the brain that are helping to repair other cells. But you've lost sleep, so it doesn't get its job done. But you're also dehydrated, and it doesn't have enough water to get its job done. And so the cells that ordinarily need to divide and multiply aren't dividing and multiplying, this time not because you're not getting enough sleep, but because there's not enough water to do the process. So if you're sleep deprived and dehydrated, you're not in a good space. Water is required for the brain's production of neurotransmitters. And you remember that the neurons don't touch each other. Here's the axon, that biggest projection from the neuron. That's how information leaves the cell. And it comes down here where all those neurotransmitters are, and they carry it across to the dendrites of another neuron. Well, you can even reduce the level of fluid in the synapse, and then that can interfere with the ability of information to get across. So how about memory? You're dehydrated, your short-term memory is going to start failing. Your recall of long-term memory is going to start failing. So the years I was a school nurse, we didn't have this research, but we had enough research to encourage kids to drink a lot of water. So as the school nurse, I would have water in every room, and I would have the kids try to drink a glass of water during each class period. And guess what? The kids who did that did better in school. Ability to perform mental arithmetic functions. You can't put two and two together in your brain when you're dehydrated. And what's an example of that? Well, trying to decide, if I sleep in for 15 more minutes, am I going to be late to work or school or breakfast or whatever? You don't do that problem solving well when you don't have enough water. It interferes with all kinds of brain function. The most common cause of headaches is what? Dehydration. You don't have enough water. It wrinkles your skin. Nothing I'm looking forward to. If your skin is wrinkling, it's already wrinkling the body organs inside your body. Mood irritability. I told you that, you know, when people are irritable and I'm needing to deal with them, the first thing I think of is they didn't get enough sleep last night. Second thing I think of is they are not drinking enough water. And if it's both of those, no wonder they're irritable. The brain tries to get your attention. Irritability is the brain's trying to get your attention and tell you things are not going so well up here today. You know, we need you to do something. It doesn't tell you what to do. You have to look at how you're living your life. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting enough pure water to drink? Increase in inflammation, depression, and other mood disorders. So you don't always directly create a problem in your health, but by your lifestyle, the result is a problem in your health. So how does this link with dementia? Here's how it goes. This is a drawing of a very healthy brain. Here's the brain tissue. Here is this layer of meninges, three of them, and then there's the skull. Now, as the water level in the brain cells fall, they get smaller. That's not rocket science. And then as the tissue itself gets smaller, what it does is start pulling away from the skull. See, now there's a space. Okay, that's part of what gives you a headache. That don't feel too good. And it's a known factor now linked with dementia. So I want you to think about how much water you drink every single day. Because you can't make up dehydration. You can get hydrated the next day, but it won't necessarily make up for the day before. Now, what does dehydration do? Well, it concentrates the blood. The blood is thicker. Okay, right off the bat, that means that you've increased your risk for blood clots because the blood is not flowing as freely. Therefore, you get less oxygen and micronutrients to the brain. The brain doesn't have enough water to create all the neurotransmitters it needs to. Interferes with digestion because the digestive juices are kind of thick. You know, think about the gravy that your mother used to make, and when you poured it, it came out in lumps. And then think about the gravy your grandmother made, and you poured it, and it was just beautiful and smooth. She'd had more experience. Well, think blood. It slows the removal of toxins and waste products, which can contribute to fatigue, sluggishness, a sense of feeling run down. It slows dissemination of substances such as serotonin. Serotonin is one of the substances that you have to have in order to feel pleasant. Now, here's two drawings. Here's a drawing of a brain that is at 1% dehydration. And you can see areas in the brain based on the PET scan that shows where the cells are shrinking because it doesn't have enough water. Now, they give this individual just one glass of water and watch what happens in the brain. And can you see how these areas of dehydration are diminishing because the brain's getting enough water? And who knew? As the blood thickens, and I mentioned that the blood doesn't flow as easily and smoothly as it thickens, you can have a clot in the brain that is a stroke. You can have a clot in your heart, which is a heart attack. You can have a clot in your lungs, which impact whether you can breathe or not and can actually kill you. But it's not just the blood. The lymph system can get thicker. The lymph in the body cannot be as fluid. And therefore, you don't get waste products removed, because one of the jobs of lymph is to go throughout the brain and body and collect toxins and get rid of them. And so that's not doing its job. We learned in 2015 that the brain has its own lymph system. We didn't know the brain had a lymph system at all before. We didn't know it was connected to the body's lymph system. Those of you who have gone to school in some medical degree, career, whatever, if you remember back to pictures of the lymph system, it stopped about your nose. You know, it showed lymph vessels all throughout the body, and it showed nothing above the nose because everybody thought the brain had no lymph system. Well, in 2015, with better equipment, they found that the brain does have a lymph system. And the lymph vessels are in these layers, the three meninges that protect the brain and the spinal cord. And that was landmark research. It was done in Jonathan Kipnis's lab. And now they're scrambling to get all the medical textbooks updated to show that, yes, the brain does have a lymph system. What's important about that? Well, lymph dehydration is as big a problem as blood dehydration. Lymph dehydration doesn't cause blood clots, but it causes lack of cleaning out the waste products. So now you have accumulation of those protein chunks in the brain that are linked with Alzheimer's. Now, we talked about the fact that when you sleep and don't get enough sleep, all of your cleaning jobs don't get done, and you can get these protein chunks accumulating. Well, now look at the same thing. Without enough water for the blood and the lymph system, now you're not even removing them either. So can you see how they go hand in hand? They give you twice as many problems. And according to Dr. Kipnis, there are implications for neurological autism spectrum disorders and schizophrenia. There have been large sample studies about how much water school-aged children up through teenagers drink. And in one of those studies, 50% of the children in the study drank no water every day. They only had fruit juice or pop. Now, are we getting better diagnosis for autism? Perhaps. But we're also drinking tons of soft drinks instead of water. So is the increase partly related to dehydration? They're looking at it. I mentioned that if you don't drink enough water, your digestive juices are not fluid enough to really digest your food. And therefore, you're going to get ineffective digestion, and you can get what's called a cognitive fog. The times that I've heard people notice that the most is after Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas. And they've overeaten. And they get up from the table and they stagger to a chair, or they stagger to some pillows in front of the fireplace and fall sound asleep. Brain fog, because they've overeaten. Well, dehydration does the same thing. This is perhaps the most important, my brain's opinion, and that is water generates the electrical energy for all brain function. Very much like a hydroelectric plant, it's the movement of water in and out of the brain cells that generate electricity. And you can measure that. The brain generates enough electricity to power a small wattage light bulb, 20 watts, something like that. And because of this, brain cells need at least twice the energy required by other cells in the body, and they get it from water most effectively. So not only do the brain cells need more glucose and energy than other cells in the body, but they need twice the energy, and they get it from water. So Dr. Allen says, when water levels within the cells fall, the production of energy also falls. So when people say, I'm so tired, I say, go drink two glasses of water and tell me how you feel. And often, they perk right up because the brain has been entering that fog state. As hydroelectric power is generated within the brain, it's stored as ATP, for those of you who are interested in the physiology. The way the research put it is the brain generates enough electricity to power a low-watt light bulb. And interference in electrical energy can mean a dim light bulb. And if it's dimmer than 20, it's pretty dim. Dr. Allen is doing research on some of these chronic conditions. And this is what she shows. Her studies have shown that individuals with brain challenges such as ADD, head injuries, anxiety attacks, depression, and autism spectrum do what? They drink very little, if any, water all day. They're drinking fruit juice and sugary drinks and, you know, sodas and pop and whatever. The resulting dehydration promotes and exacerbates the brain dysfunction associated with those conditions. So again, if you get enough sleep, you can reduce some of the symptoms of chronic illness, even if you can't completely cure the chronic illness. But your body is set up to keep you well and heal you if you get sick. But all of this is critical for immune system function. So she says, a sufficient intake of alkaline water may be beneficial for many of these brain challenges. And wouldn't it be amazing if people really started staying hydrated, that a lot of these symptoms could disappear? So, I love this cartoon. The brain is the most important organ you have, according to the brain. And it is, because everything starts in the brain. Studies have shown that brain organs will give up their need for water in favor of the brain, because it seems like they recognize that if the brain fails, they're sunk, because they can't keep going without the brain. So how does that translate? Well, it translates to you, most of you are not drinking enough water, period. And what does that mean? How much do you need every day? Growing up, I was taught you needed 8 glasses of water a day. Okay, that's long gone by the board. 8 glasses of water a day might be fine under some situations, but you could need 15 glasses of water a day, or 16, or 7, depending on what's happening. You need to drink enough water so that when you pee, that you have 1 or 2 very pale urines every day. That's how you know if you're drinking enough water. I was doing this for an annual convention for aging, people who work with older people. How old do you have to be considered very old? 85. But 85 is the new 65 if you're taking care of yourself. So I'm teaching them, you gotta help your residents when you go back to your retirement centers to drink more water. And somebody put up a hand and said, well, how do I know if I've had 1 or 2 pale urines a day? I tried to keep my face very still. I said, well, sir, you look. He goes, at what? Could I see you after the meeting? When you urinate, look at your urine. Seriously. It's your number one criteria for whether or not you're dehydrated. Well, then have somebody else look for you. I love questions. If you don't look, now, if you're taking medication that turns your urine bright orange, that could be a bit of a problem. But you could still probably see paler orange. But if your urine is not pale at least once or twice a day, you know what's going on in your brain now. You're getting brain fog, you're risking headaches, all of the stuff that goes with dehydration. You know, if you've had little kids and they're becoming toilet trained and they actually use the bathroom instead of their diaper, you know how they run and say, Mom, come and see what I did. Look what I did. Okay, well, keep looking at what you did. Because that's my cue for, whoops, I gotta up my water intake. Thirst is not a reliable indication for 2 reasons. The first one I already mentioned, and that is if you're over 50, your thirst sensation is probably diminishing. But we have a second problem that's probably contributing to the obesity epidemic around the world, and that's this. Growing up, when a baby's fussy, many mothers do not know to first offer them water. They feed them instead. And what that does is train that baby that when it feels a certain way, it's hungry. So some never even develop a thirst, hone their thirst sensation. And so in adulthood, they get this sensation and they go eat liquid food instead of drinking water. And so both of those we think are contributing to the dehydration problem in the United States. So bottom line is this. sleep is independently linked with longevity. Dehydration is linked with dementia. I want to live a long time. I want to be very healthy. I want to hang on to all my marbles. You don't need a doctor's prescription for this. You don't have to buy anything. You just have to learn the information and put it into practice. And unfortunately, human beings are notorious for getting some information and say, isn't that interesting? And they do nothing about it. Information must be turned into knowledge and practically applied. And it does make a difference. Let me end up just by telling you one of my last experiences that just happened to me in another country. Because we don't think as human beings sometimes. It's so fascinating to me. In this particular seminar, I was teaching people the importance of reading out loud for 10 minutes a day because it's anti-aging. It's so stimulating to the brain. You know, I tell school teachers, if you need to read something to the children from their textbooks, have them open their books or get on their laptop and read out loud with you because they'll remember it. So there's about 2,000 people there, and I hear this little voice somewhere in the back, and I'm not visual anyway. I know you're out there, but I mean, you could be doing all kinds of behaviors I'd never notice. And so I heard this little voice say, but I live alone. And I thought, is that voice talking to me? So I just kept on going. Pretty soon I hear it again, a little stronger. But I live alone, Dr. Taylor. And I stopped and I said, what would you like me to know about you living alone? And the voice said, well, you said I should read out loud 10 minutes a day. I said, I did. The voice said, but I'd be so embarrassed to be reading out loud alone. I said, I thought you lived alone. Who is there to notice anything that you might want to be embarrassed about? Well, I just don't think I could do that. Okay, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So I said, trying to figure out something to help this poor soul. I figured she's already dehydrated or she wouldn't be asking the question. So I said, do you have a pet? Yes, she said, I do have a beautiful Himalayan something or other. I thought that was a mountain, but that's okay. I figured it might be a cat. They're not on my radar. I said, well, this is what you do. You get your cat. You put it in this nice little bed somewhere near you. And now you read out loud in the most pleasant voice you can. Read to your cat. I thought that was brilliant, Arlene. What do you suppose she said? Well, I could do that, but I think it would be a waste of time because I'm pretty sure the cat wouldn't understand what I was saying. I hope you've understood what I've said this afternoon and that you will do whatever it takes to get enough sleep and to stay hydrated. It makes a difference. Thank you.